From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, May 8th, 2018. And on this day, Maine senators have some questions for CIA head nominee Gina Haspel. And a new test could help people avoid overdoses, or not. We'll look at both sides. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
First tonight, reaction from members of Maine's congressional delegation to President Donald Trump's decision to pull out of the Iran nuclear deal. Independent U.S. Senator Angus King says while today's decision is not surprising, it is disappointing and potentially disastrous to U.S. interests. King says by all accounts, the plan effectively hindered Iran's ability to develop nuclear weapons in the near term. Republican Senator Susan Collins says it would be better for the U.S. to continue to work closely with its allies to fix the serious deficiencies in the agreement negotiated by the Obama administration. First District Democratic Congresswoman Shelley Pingree says the president's putting his personal whims above national security interests. Pingree says President Trump's unilateral decision is unjustified, reckless, and will make the U.S. less safe. Second District Republican Congressman Bruce Poliquin says the Iran nuclear accord's a horrible deal. He says it doesn't go far enough in ensuring Iran would eliminate its nuclear weapons program while at the same time lifting critical economic sanctions on the regime. The Northern New England chapters of the American Civil Liberties Union want to know more about immigration enforcement in the region. They say their previous Freedom of Information requests have gone unanswered. So, as Fred Bever reports, they've filed suit against the federal agencies to compel them to produce the records.
The ACLU chapters have documented what they say is an unprecedented and harsh pattern of federal immigration detentions, arrests, and deportations since Donald Trump became president. The lawsuit offers the example of an asylum seeker arrested at a Cumberland County courthouse as he met with his Portland lawyer. It also highlights deportation proceedings against New Hampshire couples who are citizens or whose children are, and the arrests of prominent members of an immigrant advocacy group in Vermont.
It's happening in Maine. It's happening in New Hampshire. It's happening in Vermont.
Emma Bond is a lawyer with the ACLU chapter in Maine.
They've been targeting previously safe locations like courthouses. They've been targeting community organizations. And we are worried that this is just the tip of the iceberg.
The ACLU has asked for records that detail the circumstances of those events, as well as communications between federal authorities, local law enforcement, and local businesses. But so far, the ACLU says, there's been little response. A spokesman for Immigration and Customs Enforcement says the agency does not comment on pending litigation. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Maine's two U.S. senators say they have lots of questions for Gina Haspel, President Trump's nominee to lead the Central Intelligence Agency. As Mal Leary reports, the Senate Intelligence Committee will get a chance to question her on Wednesday.
Both Republican Senator Susan Collins and Independent Angus King serve on the Senate Intelligence Committee and are expected to play key roles in Haspel's confirmation, but both say they have not decided how they will vote. Collins says a now declassified report clears concerns about Haspel's role in the destruction of videotapes of prisoner interrogations that some consider torture, but many questions remain.
What did she know about what is called the Enhanced Interrogation Program? And that includes waterboarding, which I have consistently said was completely unacceptable and tantamount to torture.
Haspel has drawn fire from several Democratic senators for varying answers explaining her involvement in the controversial interrogation program. Senator King caucuses with the Democrats and says he had a good private meeting with Haspel to discuss her nomination, but has further questions for her.
I'm very concerned about some of the issues that have been raised in connection with this nomination, but I'll reserve judgment until after the hearing.
Both senators say they want to learn more about Haspel's 33-year career working mostly undercover at the CIA. Collins says while it's important that as many questions are asked at the public session as possible, there will be a private hearing by the committee to ask the nominee about activities that are still classified as secret. Collins wants unambiguous answers to questions involving her career at the agency and also wants to hear how independent Haspel will be in dealing with President Trump.
What would she do if the President of the United States ordered a reinstituting of that kind of interrogation of detainees? What would her response be?
With dozens of Democrats saying they will vote against her, support from Maine's senators could be pivotal. On the Republican side, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky has said he will vote against her. Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona is battling cancer and not expected to vote. And not all Republican senators have announced how they will vote, adding to the uncertainty. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Now, an update on the pre-primary wrangling in the race to oppose U.S. Senator Angus King in November. The Maine Supreme Judicial Court has reaffirmed a lower court's decision, which invalidated the candidacy of Republican U.S. Senate hopeful Max Lynn. Lynn is a financial planner. He lives in Bar Harbor. He'd appealed a ruling by Kennebec Superior Court Judge William Stokes, who found that the Secretary of State acted appropriately when he invalidated a number of petition signatures submitted by Lynn's campaign. The Secretary of State's review left Lynn 10 signatures short of the 2,000 he needed to qualify for the ballot. The review was triggered by an appeal by Lynn's would-be primary opponent, State Senator Eric Brakey of Auburn, which submitted evidence of widespread irregularities, including the signatures of dead voters. Ultimately, the Secretary of State invalidated 258 of Lynn's original total 2,248 signatures. Secretary of State Matt Dunlap said in a statement that it's too late to scrub Lynn's name from the ballot, but that voters will be notified he's no longer a valid candidate at polling places. Lynn has not yet indicated if he'll appeal today's ruling in federal court. A urine test could become another tool in the fight to reduce opioid overdose deaths in Maine. The test screens for fentanyl, a synthetic opioid that caused more than half of the 418 drug overdose deaths in the state last year. Some health advocates say the test can be used to check drugs before they're injected. Others say it's an unscientific method that could actually cause harm. Patty White has more.
With fentanyl responsible for an increasing number of overdose deaths in the state, the highly potent synthetic opioid is a concern for people like Maddie Magnuson, the director of harm reduction at the Health Equity Alliance, which has locations in northern Maine. Magnuson says drugs like heroin and cocaine are often laced with fentanyl because it's cheap, but the people who buy these drugs,
they wouldn't necessarily know that unless they were testing their supply.
That's why the Health Equity Alliance is considering distributing tests that would allow people to check before they use. They're called Rapid Response Fentanyl Test Strips. They're designed to screen urine for fentanyl, but Magnuson says they can also be used to screen drugs.
You would draw up the drugs that you're going to inject, and then with the residue that's in the cooker, you would add more water and then insert the test strip for a certain amount of time, and then it will show, you know, one line or two to tell you whether or not there is fentanyl in the drug supply.
It's a tool already in use by some harm reduction advocates outside the state. Jess Tilley is the director of the New England Drug Users Union. Over the past 2 years, she says she's distributed thousands of the fentanyl test strips to organizations and individuals and has witnessed positive results.
When the actual tangible physical evidence is in front of them, there is such a change in behavior.
Tilley says people who use drugs recreationally usually opt out if they get a batch with fentanyl. Those who are addicted, she says, do tester shots, and they're less likely to use alone so that a friend can call 911 or administer the opioid overdose reversal drug Narcan if necessary.
You know, at this point when we are losing more people than we did at the height of the AIDS epidemic, any tool is positive and something that we should investigate and use at this point.
flatly, it makes no sense whatsoever.
Dr. Mark Publicker is an addiction medicine specialist in Portland. Publicker says the test is not being used for its purpose, and it's unclear how sensitive or effective it is.
We're talking about something which is untried, untested, and can give a false sense of security.
Zoe Brokus at the India Street Public Health Center in Portland says she's also concerned that the test could give a false sense of security. If people split a batch of contaminated drugs, some portions may be fentanyl-free while others have a concentrated amount. Beyond that, Brokus says, most of the health center's clients already assume that every batch of drugs they encounter has fentanyl.
Our messages, our harm reduction messages, and the education that we give to our clients always include things like being careful, making sure you have naloxone, using with friends, doing tester amounts. And is that message really going to change if people know that there's fentanyl in their product?
Even though the health center has testing strips, it's holding off on distributing them for now. Brokus says she'll continue to consider it as she checks in with colleagues across the country about best practices. As harm reduction organizations weigh the benefits and drawbacks, Dr. Noah Nesson of Penobscot Community Healthcare says the debate likely wouldn't be necessary if the state took other actions to help reduce drug overdose deaths.
The other side of this equation is that we have to keep working to make Narcan as widely available as it can be and to offer treatment programs to people that have very low barriers.
Maddie Magnuson of the Health Equity Alliance says they'll hold a community meeting this month for clients to decide whether the organization should distribute the testing strips. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And finally today, some good news for Acadia National Park. A new National Park Service study says last year visitors to the park spent an all-time high of $284 million in the local region. The annual economic analysis was released yesterday. It shows more than half of the revenue came from lodging and camping and food and beverage. Gas, souvenirs, admissions, and local transportation made up the rest. Acadia spokeswoman Christy Anastasia says the study looks at gateway communities,
which they define as being in about a 60-mile radius from the park, and they analyze data related to those recreational visits.
Acadia attracted about 3.5 million recreation visits last year. That's an increase of 6.2% compared to 2016. In 2017, Acadia was the seventh most visited U.S. national park. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Tuesday, May 8th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.